Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity, set up chores, and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Welcome to The Beat. I am Katie Fang, in for Ari Melber. We start tonight with breaking news. Trump reportedly caught on tape. Damaging new evidence in the Trump classified documents criminal investigation. CNN is reporting prosecutors have obtained an audio recording of a summer 2021 meeting in which former President Donald Trump acknowledges that he held on to a classified Pentagon document about a potential attack on Iran. The recording indicating Trump understood that he had retained classified materials after leaving the White House. The report adds, on the recording, Trump's comments suggest he would like to share the information, but he's aware of limitations on his ability post-presidency to declassify records. This directly undercuts one of Trump's defenses that he could and that he did declassify everything. CNN has not listened to the recording, but multiple sources have described it. And NBC News has not confirmed this reporting. Now, consider this breaking news with the same lens of new reporting from The Washington Post that prosecutors are closing in on Trump, eyeing Mar-a-Lago surveillance video and possible gaps. The Post reporting Mar-a-Lago prosecutors are looking at a July 2022 episode with Trump surveillance cameras. An employee who helped move boxes of documents last June was then reportedly questioned about his conduct weeks later related to a government demand for surveillance footage from Trump's property. And detailing the employee's actions have caught the attention of investigators as they try to determine whether Trump or people close to him sought to obstruct justice. Joining me now is Maya Wiley, CEO of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights and former SDNY civil prosecutor, and Paul Butler, former federal prosecutor and professor of law at Georgetown University. Folks, this is some big news. And of course, the caveat is NBC News has not confirmed the reporting yet, but assuming arguendo what we've read so far is true. Maya, I'm going to start with you. Your thoughts on this explosive new CNN report?
Well, you said the word, Katie, explosive. I mean, all of this investigation on the part of Jack Smith is about determining Trump's state of mind if Donald Trump is to be charged with any crime here. Now, we already know the evidence has been very strong and, you know, many legal experts of all stripes and even all political persuasions, including Donald Trump's own former attorney, believe he's in deep peril on an obstruction charge related to these presidential documents that he does not own, that the American people own. But anything that gives evidence and indication that he completely understood that he was not to have or share these documents is just the last nail in a coffin that already has a whole lot of nails in it.
Maya Wiley, I was the paragon of grace. Deep peril is a very polite way of saying something even deeper. Paul, sources are describing the recording as an important piece of evidence in a possible case against Trump, who has repeatedly asserted he could retain presidential records and, quote, automatically declassify documents. Paul, you and I, Maya, all of us, we've talked a lot about the obstruction component of this investigation, but do we now have some of the strongest evidence in support of an Espionage Act violation here?
Absolutely, Katie. This is devastating for Donald Trump for two reasons. First, as Maya said, it's a confession on audio tape that Trump knew that he possessed classified documents. So Trump's defense that he had declassified everything is just a lie. Trump was fully aware that he was illegally hoarding top secret government documents. And second, to your point, Katie, if this reporting is true, this is about national security. It's way more than a documents case, as Mar-a-Lago has sometimes been dismissed. So the most important question is one we don't know the answer to, but Jack Smith might. How was Trump intending to use this material? Maybe he was just holding on to it to impress his friends and kind of a criminal version of show and tell. But prosecutors, they always follow the money, and they almost certainly suspect that Trump had some kind of caper in mind, that he either did or planned to use his illegal access to the nation's most sensitive secrets to enrich himself or to forward his political ambitions.
You know, Maya, I want to emphasize a couple of things that came out of this CNN report. Number one, it dealt with plans for a possible attack on Iran. Talk about security issues, international relations, domestic security issues. But what really struck me, though, is this report talks about, Maya, General Mark Milley. He's actually testified before the grand jury and met with investigators for special counsel Jack Smith. How much more compelling evidence would you need as Jack Smith to be able to be at this point, this tipping point of bringing an indictment against Donald Trump, considering you'd have a witness like Mark Milley who's telling the grand jury and the investigators for Jack Smith what happened, what that document was? I mean, this is yet another layer in a huge peeling onion that shows that Trump has some serious exposure here.
Yeah, there's no question it's a significant layer of onion peel. And both to Paul's really important point and your own, Katie, we don't even know how many more layers to this onion there is in terms of all these classified documents. It was one of the reasons everyone was so deeply concerned that it wasn't just a mere document retention issue, but that it was the nature of the how many and how seriously classified, as we know there are different levels of classification there are. So to your point, you know, we know that there are witnesses appearing in droves at this point, despite Donald Trump's best efforts and his legal team's best efforts to keep people with knowledge and information that directly relates to what Donald Trump might know and what these documents represented away from Jack Smith and away from that grand jury. This is, and we don't know what any of these witnesses are saying, but what we do know is they are at the top of the government food chain in terms of who has been testifying before this grand jury, who would have direct knowledge and who would have every personal interest in making sure they were not perjuring themselves. And possibly, because we don't know, even being offered the opportunity to have immunity if they had any concern about their own criminal liability. So that's just a long way of saying we don't know all the facts. Paul is really right to spell that out. But to your point, Katie, we certainly know that people who, if they're goods to be got, Jack Smith's got the folks who got them.
And Paul, to Maya's point, DOJ prosecutors, they're always moving at different paces. There's different kind of components to an investigation. But what we do know from reporting, these prosecutors are laser focused on, as well, the Mar-a-Lago surveillance video with a staffer being questioned. I mean, considering where we are, that you might have video evidence of a crime being committed, but then you're able to actually get to and speak to witnesses that actually were a part of the kind of boots on the ground operation that Trump might be running at Mar-a-Lago. Where are we in this probe then? And considering the evidence that Jack Smith has on his plate.
It certainly seems like we're near the end of the investigation. Now, what is likely happening is prosecutors are drawing up a draft indictment. And I want to focus or emphasize draft. It doesn't mean that there's been a decision made to prosecute Donald Trump. But typically, in public corruption cases, especially high-profile cases like this, prosecutors will draft an indictment and then have a review session with all of the experienced prosecutors to determine whether, first, the case should be brought, and second, whether the case can be won. That is, a jury can be persuaded beyond a reasonable doubt. And Katie, we already knew that there was this mysterious Mar-a-Lago employee who was involved with moving the documents around, possibly as part of the obstruction of justice that a federal judge found probable cause was happening at Mar-a-Lago. That was the basis of the search warrant last August. Now there's even more evidence of obstruction. Somebody at Mar-a-Lago was worried about what those videotapes might show. The cliche, it's always the cover-up. It's often true.
Maya Wiley and Paul Butler, my thanks to you for starting us off this evening, talking about this breaking news and considering where special counsel Jack Smith might be heading. I appreciate you both. And coming up, how Democrats had to step in as the grown-ups in the room when McCarthy failed to get Republicans in line. And the GOP primary field, it's about to get a whole lot bigger, which could actually help Donald Trump. All of that and more when we're back in just 60 seconds.
Hey, parents. Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Breaking news tonight. In less than 2 hours, the full House of Representatives will vote on the debt deal between President Biden and House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, aimed at averting a financial catastrophe. At this hour, leaders on both sides saying that they're confident this deal will pass the House and get to the Senate. The default deadline is June 5th, just 5 days from now. Earlier, a telling moment when the bill had to pass a key procedural test. McCarthy couldn't muster enough support from his own party. That's when Democrats came to the rescue, providing the necessary votes, but only after withholding them first. The drama also revealing weaknesses on the hard right. Let's be clear here. MAGA lawmakers in the House manufactured this crisis, essentially holding the economy hostage and demanding draconian spending cuts. They didn't get what they wanted, and they spent hours on Tuesday making threats and attacking the deal.
This deal fails completely. And that's why these members and others will be absolutely opposed to the deal, and we will do everything in our power to stop it.
Be very clear, not one Republican should vote for this deal. It is a bad deal.
In short, tomorrow's bill is a bunch of fake news.
We're not going to default. We're going to choose. They're going to say this. Let's call their bluff on it. The best deal is no deal.
Some on the far right also threatened a vote to remove Speaker McCarthy today. They appear to be waving the white flag as McCarthy's critics shy away from the threat to oust him. A ringleader of the push to remove McCarthy, who yesterday called the vote, quote, inescapable, now saying the support, the courage for such a vote, quote, might not be there. Some progressives also saying they won't back the deal. Joining me now is Alencia Johnson. She worked on the Obama and Biden campaigns, and she's the founder of 1063 West Broad. Alencia, it's always a good to see you. I mean, do you think this bill is on track to pass, or should we be worried about an 11th hour derailment here?
So I actually do think it is on track to pass, even with the caveats that you made of the extreme MAGA Republicans who are just throwing a childish temper tantrum because they didn't get their way. But also the progressives who, rightfully so, are bringing up the low-income folks, the people of color, the seniors that will still be impacted by this debt deal. But I do believe, as we've heard from McCarthy, as well as we've heard from Leader Jeffries, that there will be enough folks to have a bipartisan way forward, because overall, majority of people, even progressives who do not like the cuts to some of these programs that are protecting people who have student loans, as well as people who are on food assistance, nobody wants this government to default for America's economy to go into a recession, except these extreme MAGA Republicans.
So the threat, though, to hold a motion to vacate against McCarthy and potentially oust him as Speaker of the House seems more like a whimper than a bang. I mean, what happened to all of this bold talk from the MAGA wing?
You know, your guess is as good as mine, because they were a lot of talk and no action, and realizing that they actually did not have the support that they thought they would when they didn't get the things that have gone their way. Majority of Republicans seem to be okay with this deal, understanding that in negotiations, you're not going to get every single thing you want. I would never have thought that I would agree with something that Matt Gaetz said on national television, but he even said this weekend that they probably do not have the votes to vacate Speaker McCarthy. And so I actually think what's going to happen, if and when this debt deal passes, they don't bring that motion, some of their what seems to be loud, quote unquote, power may not be as strong going into the rest of this congressional session and then also into 2024. It actually weakens their caucus and continues to weaken the GOP.
Yeah, and to your point, Alencia, this was almost like a litmus test of the power of the Freedom Caucus. A lot of bark, no bite. Even Representative Chip Roy, he's a big talker always, saying yesterday, quote, the Republican conference right now has been torn asunder. I mean, maybe a divorce, and tell me if I'm wrong here, but maybe a divorce is exactly what the Republican Party needs. Maybe it needs to separate itself, at least the more centrist or, quote, moderate Republicans, from this kind of terroristic threat of the MAGA wing.
Look, they've been trying to divorce from Donald Trump and his, you know, extreme following. And I think this gives them a lot more ability and power to do so. Although I will say that, listen, like, I'm not giving Republicans a pass. Like, they are still continuing to push extreme agendas, right? Like, they want to inflate overall. All of the factions of the Republican Party still want to spend more in our military versus making sure that the least of these have enough food on their tables and don't go hungry or houseless. But I do think it will help them in some of their elections going forward to say, hey, look, some of these folks who are being very loud about, you know, things that they're making up, the fake news that they believe in, they're not as powerful as one would think, and they are actually in the minority.
So, Alencia, I do want to acknowledge kind of the voices of dissent that are on the other side of the aisle. This bill does not have unanimous Democratic support either. Progressives unhappy with the work requirements imposed on food stamps, for example. Representatives Ro Khanna, Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez saying that this is just this morning that they were going to vote against it. Do you think it's actually a harmful optic to have any Dems at this stage being so close to June 5th speaking out against this deal?
You know, I think what folks are saying is that they are making sure that those who have put them in office, for people who feel as though they don't have representation here in Washington, D.C., to advocate for their needs, whether it's students in an enormous amount of debt, whether it is people who rely on, you know, food assistance programs, the people who are fighting for environmental justice, they want to make sure that they have a champion. The reality is, I do believe that, again, this will pass with Democratic support. But what some of these progressives are doing, and look, I worked for a very progressive senator, Elizabeth Warren, you know, and Senator Sanders said that he was actually not going to vote for this for the reasons that I just talked about. They're actually speaking to the American public that we need to talk to. So I think it's actually, I don't think it weakens the Democratic Party. I think it talks about the fact that we should not be in this position because of the kids that are over on the other side holding the economy hostage. And we should be making sure that we are talking to the most vulnerable in our communities, which is why you see Congresswomen Bush and Lee proposing amendments to take away the expansion of work requirements. You saw Congresswoman Presley putting forth an amendment around the student loan debt repayment. So they are coming up with solutions to make sure that this does work for the marginalized. And I do believe that it's going to expand the conversation and show people who it is that Democrats are fighting for versus who the Republicans are fighting against.
Well, it's still a tick-tock. June 5th, 5 days away. We're going to keep our eye heavily on what ends up happening this evening and then in the Senate. Alencia Johnson, thank you so much for being here. It's always so good to see you.
Good to see you.
And coming up, back to the breaking news. Trump reportedly caught on tape discussing classified documents. This is big. Plus, insults are flying as the 2024 GOP field gets more crowded and nastier. The field of Republicans hoping to break Trump's death grip on the party is growing, and it could be getting nastier. NBC News today confirming former Vice President Michael Pence will jump into the 2024 race. He'll launch his bid next week with a speech in Iowa. Former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, also about to jump in with an event next Tuesday in New Hampshire. He's been one of Donald Trump's most prominent Republican critics.
Showtime is over, everybody. We are not electing an entertainer in chief.
He sits in his jammies in Trump Tower and phones in.
Let's call this what it is. January 6th was a riot that was incited by Donald Trump.
His response yesterday to me was ridiculous. That he didn't even know the woman.
When I ran for re-election in 2013, I got 60% of the vote. When he ran for re-election, he lost to Joe Biden.
How many coincidences are we going to have here with Donald Trump, Brian? I mean, he must be the unluckiest SOB in the world.
Chris Christie ran unsuccessfully in 2016, publicly attacking Trump. Then he quickly endorsed Trump and advised him in the 2020 campaign. Before breaking with Trump again. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis also getting sharper elbows by Ron DeSantis in his attacks.
The former president's now attacking me, saying that Cuomo did better handling COVID than Florida did. Florida did. First of all, that's not what he used to say. This is like new. Like 6 months ago, he would have never said that, right? He used to say how great Florida was. Hell, his whole family moved to Florida under my governorship. Are you kidding me?
All of this rhetoric setting the stage for a messy showdown with a crowded field diluting the anti-Trump GOP vote. The opposite of what some D.C. Republicans actually wanted. Here to discuss is Democratic strategist and pollster and MSNBC political analyst Fernanda Mondi and Juanita Tolliver, political strategist and the host of Crooked Media's What a Day podcast. Always so good to have both of you here, my friends. Juanita, I'd like to start with you. With Mike Pence and Chris Christie preparing to enter the race, the non-Trump, non-DeSantis field has now grown exponentially larger. But frankly, are we just looking at a repeat of 2016 here?
More than likely. Look, you have a crowded field, all trying to elbow each other out. But the reality is none of them are polling in a competitive way outside of DeSantis. And when you look at DeSantis, he's somebody who won't even say Trump's name. I'm literally feeling like Destiny's Child right now, Katie. Like, say his name and say it every single day. Exactly right. Because I do think that is something that Chris Christie can bring into this race, though. We know he's going to say Trump's name and he's going to hit him every single day. But with his unfavorables being about 47% among Republican voters, no one likes him in a GOP primary. So the most he'll be able to do is kick up some dirt against Trump, but it won't get him anywhere further. And when I look at Pence, he's somebody who looks at standing up to Trump as a negative, which is ridiculous. This could be a major power position for Pence, but he has refused to step into that since the day Trump sent those armed militia members down to the Capitol shouting, "Hang Mike Pence."
You know, Fernand, I think it's more, or Juanita, I think it's more like Voldemort, or like the, right, the guy whose name, right. He who shall not be named. But Fernand, to Juanita's point, though, Mike Pence, mother may I, Mike Pence, can he succeed without attacking his former running mate, Donald Trump? And more importantly, is Mike Pence prepared to take the gloves off? If there's anyone, Fernand, that knows where the bodies are buried, it's got to be Mike Pence.
For sure, Katie. I mean, first off, we have to understand and accept this for what it is. Mike Pence's very entry into the race is a signal to Donald Trump that whatever idea that he was going to be the obsequious little sycophant, that's over. This is the revenge tour for Pence and also for Chris Christie, I might add. Chris Christie's coming in a little bit more as the Tonya Harding in this case. His job is to just shank Donald Trump and try and hurt him and bring him down as best as he can. But, you know, what's contradictory about both of their entries or potential entries into the races, this really does help Donald Trump. It does dilute the field. But in a way, Katie, it also hurts significantly Ron DeSantis, because what their entry is into the race is saying is that Ron DeSantis has not scared anybody off. Donald Trump has certainly not scared them off. And you're going to have a pile on, a complete effort here where all of these guns are now going to be trained on Trump. In a way, that's going to be problematic, but we have to be realistic here. Let's look at the polling. Compared to 2016, and this may be a shocking thought for all of your viewers to understand, Donald Trump is in a much, much stronger position today in 2023 to win the Republican nomination than he was in 2016.
Okay, Juanita, though, I'm going to push back a little bit on what Fernand said, which is I personally, I'm more worried about a Ron DeSantis presidency than I am about the possibility of a Donald Trump winning the Oval Office again. My concern, Juanita, and maybe you can assuage my fears, my concern by getting this many people pointing daggers and really just going after Donald Trump, it actually helps Ron DeSantis when it comes to his numbers, when it comes to his, you know, strength and his perceived kind of integrity. I mean, my concern is all of this actually doesn't help Donald Trump. It only helps Ron DeSantis.
If they can land the punches, and let's be real, the most effective Republican we've seen as of late to do a great job with effective hit backs and throwing shade is Trump, sadly. And so I think it's really on the shoulders of people like Christie and people like Pence to be able to fire directly and land the punches, because if they don't land, then that does help Trump. Remember, I think the polling Fernandez was referring to is the NBC poll that showed that 70% of GOP primary voters were ready to support Trump again in 2024. And that is what's critical here, because that's who DeSantis is trying to pick up. That's who he's trying to carve a piece out of. And DeSantis is again, refusing to name Trump directly. So unless those punches land on Trump, then this doesn't actually help DeSantis.
You know, so, Katie, one other quick thing I might add, you know, Ron DeSantis' play here now, he's playing to be the last man standing, because Donald Trump right now has a vice grip on this nomination. That's what these other candidates jumping into this race, they're playing that game too. You reported at the top of the show this breaking news, this potential bombshell, which shows that that classified documents case is leading a little bit more likely to an indictment. That's going to completely potentially upend this Republican primary field for Trump. So that's another calculation that Pence and I think Christie and these other candidates are looking for. What does it look like if Trump is removed from the scene, either by his own design or by other forces? And then how do we grapple with Ron DeSantis, who has proven to be a horrible campaigner, a horrible political talent, just does not have the skills. And that's part of the reason why he's losing support in the Republican primary as opposed to gaining support since he's gotten into the race, Katie.
So, Juanita, we did put up a graphic a second ago that shows that Chris Christie, actually 70% of people in his home state of New Jersey, among GOP and GOP-leaning voters, the folks are looking at the screen, 70% would not consider him for this role. And part of it, I think, is in fairness, the flip-flopping, right? I mean, his flip-flopping has been so profound. I mean, he's sassy. I'll give him that. Nobody deserves flowers on the GOP at this point. Nobody gets their flowers. But how would you advise, Juanita, somebody like Chris Christie, who does have name recognition on par with somebody like Mike Pence and certainly better than Asa Hutchinson, for example, how would you actually advise somebody like Chris Christie to have to reconcile the flip-flopping that we've seen from him?
Recognize your flaws immediately and loudly, right? Like just as loud as he's taking shot at Trump's, call out himself, because he loves to talk about how, okay, yeah, in 2013 when he ran for re-election in New Jersey, he won 60% of the vote, but Trump lost in 2020. But I'm like, sir, in 2016, after you dropped out of the race, you refused to endorse Ted Cruz, you refused to endorse Marco Rubio, any other Republicans still in the race before Super Tuesday, and you threw your weight behind Trump. Then you worked on Trump's transition process, right? Like it's the reality is he needs to call himself out quickly in order to admit his own flaws, admit his own shortcomings about Trump, and then he can go on offensive about Trump. But without doing that, he just looks ridiculous and he looks like a flip-flopper.
Talk about no choices. Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, or Donald Trump. those are no options for me. Fernanda Mondi, Juanita Tolliver. Again, nobody gets their flowers out of that side. Thank you so much for being here tonight. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Katie.
And coming up, the breaking news tonight, Trump caught on tape talking about a classified document as he plots to purge investigators. That's next.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance. while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
We're following that breaking news tonight, damaging new evidence in the Trump classified documents criminal investigation. CNN reporting prosecutors have obtained an audio recording of a summer 2021 meeting in which former President Donald Trump acknowledges that he held onto a classified Pentagon document about a potential attack on Iran. The recording indicating that Trump understood that he had retained classified materials after leaving the White House. Joining me now is David Korn, Washington Bureau Chief for Mother Jones. David, this is stunning new breaking news. What's your take?
Well, we see that the Jack Smith investigation is very active. He continues to bring new, he's not doing it publicly, but we're learning new facts about this expanding case and possible prosecution against Donald Trump. Now, it's key to remember that these documents don't have to be classified, the ones that he took or that he stole, in order for him to have legal jeopardy here. It's still wrong and perhaps criminal to take sensitive documents, whether they're classified or not. But what this tape that CNN is disclosing shows is that he saw these documents as classified, something that he has claimed isn't really true, that he mentally declassified them or magically declassified them even after he left the White House, which, of course, he has no power to do as an ex-president. And the fact that he was talking about these documents also with people who presumably did not have clearance is another problem. He's then sharing classified information, which is a possible crime, whether or not you have a document that you're handing to someone or not. The information itself, sharing that, could put him into a legal problem. So, you know, tapes can be clear. They can really be, you know, and they're clearly giving Jack Smith yet another roadmap for yet another tentacle in his investigation. So he's obviously talking to the people who are at the meeting. He's talked to General Milley, who was involved with, possibly with the document that Trump was talking about. So, you know, it's one more thing here on a day when we also learned that Jack Smith was talking to Krebs, the computer expert who was booted out of the White House, and talking to people at the personnel office who were involved with possibly trying to put Trump loyalists into the Justice Department after the election so they could say that the election was rigged when it wasn't. And to my mind, these all raise questions, too, whether Jack Smith is looking at whether Donald Trump corrupted the U.S. government for fraudulent purposes. And there are all sorts of, you know, crimes in the criminal code about such matters. So there's a lot out there, and it just is looking more and more unlikely that Trump will escape from Jack Smith's investigations without any indictments.
Yeah, so David, there's a specific Espionage Act that's actually identified in the search warrant that was used to actually go to Mar-a-Lago and execute the lawful search warrant. Section 793, Part D of the U.S. Code says it's illegal to knowingly retain information that one believes could do damage to the U.S. or aid another country and fail to deliver it on demand to the officer or employee of the United States entitled to receive it. That's pretty plain language. You don't have to be a lawyer to understand that the facts as we know it, and your point's well taken. Right. These are the public forward facing facts that we know. There's a lot of stuff that Jack Smith knows that we don't even have knowledge about. But you don't have to be a lawyer to understand that what we know so far falls squarely within this particular violation of a statute. And the people who are listening to this conversation on the tape, David, they don't have the clearance to be able to look at this document. How is this not going to materially be a slam dunk prosecution? And again, you don't have to be a lawyer to be able to address the obviousness of this.
You know, revealing the existence of a classified document to someone who's not cleared for that information in and of itself is a violation, whether you even get into what's within the document. So there are many, many, many different levels of possible criminal action here. But the bottom line still is that he took materials that did not belong to him. If he took the Resolute desk out of the Oval Office and brought it to Mar-a-Lago and said, it's mine, and I'm not giving it back, it'd be pretty clear that he stole U.S. government property. It's the same thing with these documents under the Presidential Records Act. And now, this latest turn is that all his arguments, which are just smokescreen to say, I declassified this stuff. But even that argument itself, which his lawyers won't make in legal findings, indicating that they don't think this is a strong stance to take or may not be a true stance. Even without that, we see now with this recording that he, at the time, might have been aware that, no, these were not declassified. He had not declassified these documents. They were indeed classified. So a lot of this goes to state of mind, right? You can make mistakes. You can think, a document is perfectly fine to take. It's a lot of it is intention. And here we see in this recording, if the CNN reporting is accurate, Trump clearly intended to hold on to a classified document and to talk about it and maybe share its contents with others.
Well, to invoke that phrase, right, Lordy, there are tapes. David Korn, thank you for joining us, especially to cover this breaking news. I appreciate you, as always.
Thank you. Ahead,
scandals already swamping the United States Supreme Court. Now, blowback to a new controversial decision. That's next. The Supreme Court continuing to face increasing scrutiny, now nearly 1 year since overturning Roe v. Wade. The highest court in the land still making sweeping decisions out of step with the majority of the nation, all while entangled in an ethics controversy. Recent polling shows trust in our judiciary is at an all-time low, with only 47% of Americans having a, quote, fair amount of trust. And now this divisive and divided court is going after our environment, courtesy of a decision that puts drastic new limits on the Clean Water Act, a move that will, quote, significantly curtail the federal government's ability to protect American waters. The environment in recent history has become a polarizing topic, but it was a Republican president who created the Environmental Protection Agency. Nixon enacted what we now know as the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act.
Clean air and clean water, the wise use of our land, the protection of wildlife and natural beauty, parks for all to enjoy. These are part of the birthright of every American. To guarantee that birthright, we must act, and act decisively. It is literally now or never. The quality of our life on this good land is a cause to unite all Americans.
A cause to unite all Americans. Now, five lifetime appointed justices on the United States Supreme Court have chipped away at those protections. Joining me now is senior correspondent at Vox, Ian Millhiser, who covers the Supreme Court. He's also the author of The Agenda, How a Republican Supreme Court is Reshaping America. Ian, you and I always talk about some very serious and very important decisions that come out of SCOTUS. This clean water ruling, yet another bad one coming out of SCOTUS. We had one last year dealing with fossil fuels. I almost passed out when I saw myself agreeing with Brett Kavanaugh on this. But Kavanaugh's kind of position is really the one we should be taking. I mean, this ruling from a 9-0 SCOTUS effectively hurts not only us, but generations to come.
That's right. So it was a 9-0 decision with respect to whether the particular landowner in this case wins. She won. But it is a 5-4 decision with respect to how to read the Clean Water Act. And like you said, even Brett Kavanaugh said that the way that the majority would read the Clean Water Act was very bad. So first of all, what you have to understand is the problem you have with water policy is that if I dump something right outside my home, the next time it rains, it might go into a creek and wind up in a river. It might go down a storm drain and wind up in a reservoir somewhere. You know, toxins travel, and you need to have a way to prevent them from traveling to rivers. Or to other important bodies of water. This case primarily deals with wetlands. Essentially, what this case said is that more than half of the wetlands in this country are no longer protected by the Clean Water Act. And that's a huge deal because these wetlands act as filters that filter out a lot of the toxins that are making the way to our rivers, our lakes, our streams, our water supply. And so this is, I mean, the punchline is this is going to make a lot of our water much less safe, a lot less drinkable, and potentially a lot more toxic.
So, Ian, this dealt with what we call statutory construction, the way that a justice reads the language of a statute, thereby reaching a particular decision or a ruling based upon how that statute is written. Basic legislative law, right, could be we have a new statute that gives more protection. So what could Congress do to maybe push back against what we just got from the Supreme Court?
Well, Congress could rewrite the Clean Water Act to essentially bring all those wetlands back within its scope. I mean, the one caveat I would add to that is if you read the Clean Water Act, it's already pretty clear that those wetlands should have been protected. So the word that the statute uses is adjacent. Wetlands that are adjacent to a body of water are protected. And as Justice Kagan pointed out in her opinion, you know, if I say that my house is adjacent to yours, there might be a fence in between my house and yours. There might be some grass. They're still adjacent. What the Supreme Court said, what the majority said in this case, is that the wetlands have to be connected by a continuous surface connection. That's what Justice Alito's majority opinion said. And that means that a lot of wetlands that feed into various waterways, that filter out various toxins from those waterways, and that have been protected in some cases for 40 or 45 years, now won't be protected for the first time since the Clean Water Act was signed.
So, Ian, quickly, I got less than a minute here. I mean, these decisions are coming out. People like you, thank gosh, are on top of it and actually kind of charting what is happening with them. But are there any other major environmental cases on this docket or on upcoming dockets about which you're aware?
Yeah. So this is the biggest environmental case probably of this term. We probably aren't going to get too many more blows, but it's part of a much bigger pattern where it seems like every term we get a more serious blow to the environment. Last term, the Supreme Court went after the Clean Air Act. This year, they went after the Clean Water Act. And, you know, next term, who knows what's going to be next? And again, like, at some point, you have to wonder what value the law has. If the court can take a statute, it says that wetlands adjacent to the waterway are protected, and it can just make up some new rules which says that, nope, they aren't anymore.
Well, you and I talk about all the time how you're not supposed to have an activist judiciary, and the GOP loves to scream against the activist judiciary. And yet when you get this type of construction, that's what you end up with in terms of statutory interpretation. Ian Millhiser, thank you so much for joining us and talking about this very important case that just kind of went below the radar last week because there's always something going on. I appreciate you.
All right. Thank you, Katie.
And we will be right back. And before we go, a quick reminder. You can watch The Katie Fang Show Saturdays and Sundays at 8 a.m. Eastern right here on MSNBC. That does it for me.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.